Well, good morning, North Point. That's pretty epic, right? It's fun to walk into. My name is Clay. If we haven't had the chance to meet, I'm one of the pastors on staff here. I get to lead our young adults ministry. Come on, my people over there. But since it's been a minute since I've been on this stage, I've had a pretty big life event happen. I actually had another kid, or my wife had another kid, and I brought a picture of him. This is Cash. Yeah, he's the man. That's kind of the face that he has at all times. He's just always happy, and I love that about him. The only thing that I have against him right now is he has started to say some words, and the first thing he's saying is mama. And I don't know about y'all, I just thought dada. I thought that was it every time. And so my feelings are a little hurt, but it's okay. He's still the best. And I show you this picture because, one, I love my kids and I wanna show them off as much as possible. But secondly, because where we're going today, this message that I'm gonna give, it's honestly gonna come back to him on some level. And the reason that I believe what we're gonna talk about today is so important is honestly, as I was thinking about him and my kids, and so I'm super excited to give this message. We're gonna start a new series today. It's called The Choices Legends Are Made Of. The Choices Legends Are Made Of. Over the next few weeks, we're going to look at the book of Daniel from the Old Testament. We're gonna look at the lives of Daniel and his friends, some of the most compelling figures in all of Scripture, in all of the Old Testament. I love these stories so much. And what we're gonna look at is specifically are the choices that these guys made that led up to the stories that we know so much about today. And these stories are iconic. Whether you grew up in church or not, you've probably heard some of these stories, like his friends refusing to bow down to the king's statue. Or I think about his friends getting thrown into a fiery furnace and living to tell the tale. Or I think about Daniel himself getting thrown into a lion's den and walking out. He survives it somehow. On the other side, he is alive. These are legendary stories. They're stories that we love to hear about, that they make movies about, that they write about, that we love to hear. These are amazing things. They're also the kind of stories that maybe make you go, man, how did they do that? I don't know if I could ever do that. Those guys must have been built different. Maybe they were born different. But what we're going to look at in this series and what I want you to consider is, what if they weren't built different, but actually they just chose different? What if it's not something they were naturally gifted in, but it's actually something that they chose to do over and over again? And more so than that, the question that I want to ask is this: do we possess the stuff of legends? Could it be possible that we can do the same things, that we possess the stuff that Daniel and his friends did? And in order to do that, I want to start at the very beginning. This is one of my favorite stories in all of Daniel. It's maybe not one of those top three that I kind of listed at the beginning, but it's a story that I personally love and that I come back to all the time. And I believe it's a story that we get to see Daniel make a choice that I believe sets up all of the choices to come later. This story in chapter one, it starts right here, and then his lives and their lives continue forward, and it's all kind of based on this one choice he makes very early on. And so for the context, to set the context, where we are, we're in 605, around 605 BC, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, he's going around and he's conquering all these nations. And he's just conquered Egypt, one of the biggest nations at this time. He's finished off the Assyrians, who had a huge kingdom at one point. And the Assyrians were actually the ones that marched to northern Israel, or to Israel, but at that point they had been divided. There was northern Israel and Judah, and the Assyrians took over the northern part, and so Israel is gone, and now King Nebuchadnezzar comes in, and now he just gets all of that. But Judah, that pesky little nation, they weren't defeated yet. And so King Nebuchadnezzar, he walks north from Egypt, and he walks right into Judah. He marches straight to the capital of Jerusalem, and it's actually a pretty quick battle. He quickly besieges the king and basically tells the king, hey, be loyal to me, swear your loyalty to me, swear your allegiance to me, or I'm just gonna remove you. And so it wasn't really a hard choice. He said, okay. And then the Babylonian king, Nebuchadnezzar, he picks up all his troops, he gets the wagons and all of the things that he's gonna take back with him, and he heads back to Babylon. And that's where we pick up in verse 3. He says this: Nebuchadnezzar ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, Okay, so what's happening here is Nebuchadnezzar is a smart guy, right? Like, he's not just going around. He doesn't just slaughter everybody. He doesn't just set the whole thing aflame. No, he actually goes and he grabs some of the best and the brightest. He gets some of these guys that he knows are going to be legit, that he could maybe use. And so he grabs these guys. He takes them back to Babylon. He's got this. It's a very long plan. He's going to take them back to Babylon. He's going to train them up. And then maybe he can send them back and he'll create this culture. He's trying to, it's kind of like this world domination kind of thing. And he's going to get everybody on board to be Babylonian, to accept this new culture. And so who does he choose? Verse 4. It says he's gonna get young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. So he picks a few good men. He picks the guys with the highest GPAs, the ones with the best SAT scores, the ones that can run the 6-minute mile, that it just looks obvious, they're the guys. I think it's probably the guys that would have been cast for the Marvel superhero movies. Well, maybe not Spider-Man, but definitely all the guys named Chris. Like, that's who he's thinking of. This is them. And then verse 5 says, the king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. So he's giving them a meal plan. He's giving them the same food that the king eats. And it's kind of like this thing where he's trying to appeal to them. He's trying to make it easy on them. He wants them to come. He's like, yeah, just come embrace the culture, which reminds me a little bit of when I went to the University of Georgia and go Dogs, by the way. And I started to get this tour. It's almost like when you're getting a tour, they're trying to convince you to come there. And so we're talking about the sports and the academics, but the main thing that they wanted to talk about were the dining halls, the meal plans. They were like, Clay, we want you to come here, but you've got to see the meal plans. You've got to see the dining halls. I'm like, really? It's not just a cafeteria, like the normal food? They're like, no, you have to see this. And so I'm on the tour and I go in the dining hall and I mean, I was sold immediately. My eyes were opened. It was like, wait, I can get burritos here and hamburgers over there. And now they have milkshakes. Like, I'm going to be here anytime I want, all the time. I'll be in here a lot. And I was immediately sold. I love a meal plan. And honestly, college students are eating like kings and queens these days. This is what Babylon must have felt like. This is what they must have been walking into. They were going to get this amazing meal plan. They were going to get to eat whatever the king ate. And it was just going to be the best thing ever. How could you ever say no to that? It's like they're hitting the lottery. And then verse 5, it says they were to be trained for 3 years. And after that, they were to enter the king's service. So again, it's literally like university internship, 3 years. You're going to go off for a little bit. You're going to get trained up. You're going to have the best resources. You're going to be able to do whatever you want. It's like going to the Harvard of Babylon. It's going to be amazing. Other than that small detail of them getting kidnapped and exiled, it's kind of the perfect situation. Like, just forget the kidnapping. It's going to be awesome. And so who does he grab? Here we see it specifically, verse 6. Among those whom were chosen were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So verse 7, the chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, the name Belteshazzar. To Hananiah, Shadrach. To Mishael, Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. And so Daniel is one of several young men chosen to literally be in the king's court with these other guys, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. But as soon as he gets there, they do something interesting. This is an important note. He immediately changes their names. All of a sudden, they're not going to go by Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah anymore. Now they're going to go by Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Why is this important? What does this tell us? It's important because renaming signified ownership. It signifies ownership. So I think about when you get a dog or a new pet. A lot of times those pets already have names coming in. And as soon as it becomes yours, as soon as you own that dog or your new pet, you want to change the name. And because you didn't really like that old name. And so you want to give them a new name, even though it's going to be really confusing for the pet probably. It might take a minute. But you want to change the name, and you can change the name because now that dog is yours. That pet is yours. And now you own it, and so you can rename it. This is what King Nebuchadnezzar is doing. It's almost this way of saying, hey, I own you now. I'm your lord now, and you're going to submit to me and nothing else. Notice, up until this point, all of the stuff that I just read, it's doing a few things. First and foremost, it's changing their identity. That is King Nebuchadnezzar's whole goal here. He's trying to change their identity. He's trying to assimilate them to the culture, and he's trying to secure their loyalty. He's defining for them who they're gonna be and who they're going to worship. And to a certain extent, they even seem to be okay with it. Up until this point, nothing has really caused any pushback. We're just kind of reading the context. We're getting a feel for where we're at in the story. But then we get this line in verse 8 that is my favorite line. This is the line that we're gonna be in today. It's the core verse that I wanna focus in on. And it's simple, it's short and sweet. It says this in verse 8, but Daniel resolved. Highlight it, circle it, underline it in your Bibles. Resolved is the word that we're gonna focus on today. And it's a simple word. It's a Hebrew word. It's two words in the Hebrew that means set his heart. Or it means to pre-decide. It means to determine ahead of time. So Daniel determined ahead of time. He resolved, he pre-decided to what? To not to defile himself. Another common Hebrew word that we don't necessarily use a lot in our context today, defile. It means literally to stain or to pollute. It means to contaminate, or figuratively, it means to desecrate, which is another kind of big word that basically means taking something sacred and making it common. It means that Daniel's refusing to lower himself beneath a certain standard. He's refusing to compromise. So Daniel's resolved not to compromise himself, not to lower himself when it comes to what? With the royal food and wine. And you're like, what? The royal food and wine? Hold up. That's the thing that you're concerned about? Like the meal plan, the dining hall, that's where you're gonna draw the line in the sand. That's what you don't wanna do. That's what you're gonna be resolved about. He's fine with being re-educated. He's fine with being relocated. He's fine with being renamed. But eating the food is too far. I can't do it. Gonna draw the line there. That's too much. This is the hill that he is literally going to die on. Daniel, brother, can we talk about this? Like, can we talk just for a second? I mean, you are elite of the elite right now. You've won the lottery. You have all the food and everything you could ever want. How could anyone say no to this? The guys are like, this will set you back. This is gonna cost you. This is gonna get you sent to the salt mines. You don't want to do this. So what's with the food? What could be the thing? Why is he making this decision? And there are a few theories, there are a few reasons we think that this may be the case. The first is that maybe the food wasn't kosher, that maybe it wasn't blessed by God. The second is maybe they sacrificed it to idols, Babylonian gods, and so Daniel was refusing to partake in that or participate in that. A really good theory is that it had been blessed by Marduk, which was the chief god of the Babylonians. And basically, if Daniel were to get healthy and strong and be really successful and do really well, then Marduk would get all the credit, and he didn't want that either. Another option is maybe it was political. And these are all good reasons. They're all good theories, and they could all be true. But at the end of the day, we don't really know. At the end of the day, we don't actually know with 100% certainty why Daniel refused to eat the food or drink the wine. We have some really good guesses, and they may be possible. But at the end of the day, we don't actually know. All we know is something in Daniel knew that eating the food wasn't right. All we know for sure is that something in him, his conscience, something deep inside of him, the gut feeling, maybe something in him just knew that it wasn't right. All we know for sure is that Daniel pre-decided not to lower himself beneath a certain standard he had set for himself. All we know for sure, 100% certainty, because Daniel didn't tell us, it's not recorded in scripture. All we know for sure is Daniel pre-decided not to lower himself beneath a certain standard he had set for himself. And here's what's so important about that. Here's why I point that out and I go through all of this, is because in a way, Daniel does something here that can be extremely hard for us. It can be extremely difficult for us, because isn't it true that in moments like this, in situations like this, where our conscience is telling us something different than what other people are telling us, that it can be really hard to go with our conscience and not give a reason? A lot of times we feel like in moments of conscience or deep conviction, we feel like we have to explain why. We feel like we have to give a reason. And for that reason, sometimes that leads us to compromise, because we, in the moment, we don't actually feel like we have a good reason. We just have this gut feeling, and in a lot of ways it can make us not do the right thing. And also by coming out and taking it out into the public and saying no to something or declining an offer, it can make us feel like we're gonna look foolish, like we're gonna be alone or misunderstood because people aren't gonna understand. And I don't really have a good reason other than my conscience is telling me to, or it's a belief that I have, and that's the best reason I've got. I'd be willing to bet that we've all felt this at some point or another in our lives, where we're feeling this wrestle of, should I obey my conscience or should I do what other people are asking me to do? The truth is, the reality is, matters of conviction or conscience are sometimes beyond reason. They live in that quiet inner place between you and God. Or in talking about our consciences, I love the way that C.S. Lewis talks about this. He once referred to it as the bridge that links the creature to the creator. The bridge that links the creature to the creator. It's this thing, it's this unseen thing that connects us back to God that we can't really describe, or we don't always know for sure, but it's this thing that we just know is true. It's that still small voice whispering truth even when no one else hears it. Daniel's story shows us that we don't always have to give a reason for something that we believe is right. I can remember talking to my dad about this, a situation that he had as he was working, and I always felt like I knew his work was going well, that his career trajectory was good. It was like up and to the right. And I was just getting to hear about a situation where he was always getting new responsibility, because with success becomes responsibility, or comes responsibility, comes new opportunities. And so he's getting invited to golf trips, and he's getting invited to attorney retreats and client meetings. And the expectations that come with that are, you have to do everything. You gotta go to all the things, you've gotta be at everything, you gotta stay out late, you gotta do all the things and impress the clients and get all of this stuff. And with that comes this tension of, do I trust my conscience and not do the things that I feel like I shouldn't do? Or do I go through with it because that's how I'm gonna get a promotion? That's how I'm gonna take care of my family. And those are good reasons. And those are things that you maybe need to do. But also, I've got this gut feeling. And if we haven't pre-decided, then there are maybe gonna be some awkward situations. It might be difficult. But for my dad, it wasn't difficult because he had already pre-decided. He'd already resolved, no, I'm not gonna do that. And so it was actually pretty easy to say, sorry, I'm not gonna do that. I'll wait in my car while y'all go do those things. My dad had already pre-decided. He had already chosen. He chose to listen to that small, still voice, even though it may cost him, even though his no may not have made any sense to those around him, even though he may not have had the perfectly articulated reason, because he knew that one choice like this can lead to somewhere where we don't want to end up. Or I love the way that John Tyson, one of my favorite preachers in New York, he says it this way. He says, the standards you set give you the life you get. The standards you set give you the life you get. Or the way I wrote it in my notes for our time today is, the standards you resolve to live by determine the life you live. The standards you resolve to live by determine the life you live. What it's saying is, the standards that you set, those guardrails, those things, the values that you set beforehand, those are gonna help you, that you pre-decide to follow, those are gonna help you get to the place you wanna get to. They're gonna help you become the person that you want to be. They will determine who you become, because here's the truth, and you know this because you're all smart people. If we compromise one time, then we're more likely to compromise a second time. And if we make a bad choice one time, we're more likely to make a bad choice a second time. If we don't listen to our conscience one time, it's gonna be much easier to not listen to it again a second time, or a third time, and a fourth time, until it becomes a pattern. And all of a sudden, we're now living a life that we never chose, that we never thought about, because we've just been letting our lives flying by the seat of our pants, determining it in the moment. So why did Daniel resolve not to defile himself with the food and wine? It's actually pretty simple, because Daniel knew that resolve in the small moments, in the insignificant things, shapes who we become. He knew that consistency matters, that it's not just about the big legendary moments, but it's the moments all the way that leading up to that as well. He knew that obedience matters. And so he resolved to follow God no matter the situation. He resolved to follow his conscience no matter what, even if it was small. Despite the pressure, despite what's coming at him, I'm gonna follow my conscience no matter what. He was determined to pay attention to that tension, to his conscience. And it wasn't in the moment, wasn't when the pressure was on, it wasn't when the steak was already hitting the plate. No, Daniel made up his mind ahead of time. And so when the pressure hit, he wasn't panicked, he was prepared. And that's what resolve is. Resolve is deciding who you're going to be before the pressure decides for you. It's deciding who you're gonna be before the pressure decides for you. And because of that resolve, Daniel was able to do something hard. And I would argue not just hard, but something unthinkable, something really difficult. He asked for permission. We continue in verse 8. It says, Daniel asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. And so what we see here is this isn't just an internal wrestling. It's not just an internal decision. No, he actually had to take a step. That Daniel actually had to move. He had to go do something hard. That this resolve wasn't just gonna let him sit still and just think about it and wrestle and maybe walk away. No, it made him have to take a step and do something difficult. And so he had to go to the chief official who had probably never been asked this before. And he had to say, hey, I actually don't think I can eat this food, which is bold. I don't even like talking to my waiter too many times at a meal. I would eat something I'm allergic to before I sent it back. And he's gonna do this with the king's food, the guy who wants you to bow down to his statue. Like, he's got a little bit of an ego. You're gonna send that food back or ask not to eat it. For me, I wouldn't wanna inconvenience him. It would stress me out. So to do this, it's bold, it's risky. It's gonna challenge him in a way. But Daniel appealed anyways. Did it take courage? Yes. Was it a dangerous step? No doubt. Did it require trust? Absolutely. But it was the only way in his mind. Because when you've already decided who you are, you don't let fear decide for you. When you've already decided who you are, you don't let fear decide for you. And what happens next? I love this. This is my favorite moment. Verse 9, what happened when he put himself out there, when he made the big ask? It's simple. It says, now God. Two words, immediately after making the ask, immediately after putting himself out there, it just says, now God. These are the next two words. As soon as he takes this step, what I love is that God steps in. So now God, it continues, had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. And this is incredible because this was really Daniel's only hope. The only way that he was gonna get out of this, the only way that this was gonna work out is if God stepped in, if God came through. Because at this point, he is at the complete mercy of God and the Babylonians, which I don't trust them at all. And so we really need God to come through in this moment. And there was no guarantee he would. He's asking this question, he's asking for permission, and he has no idea what is going to happen. And honestly, the odds are not in his favor, but he trusted that God would come through. And the moment he steps out in courage is when God steps in with favor. This is so important to realize because oftentimes the moment of risk, the moment of resolve, the moment of obedience becomes the doorway for God to move. And so for us, when we're feeling those tensions, those moments of risk and resolve, those are the moments, they're key moments because we're opening doors for maybe God to show up and move. And then we see these miracles in our lives that are starting to happen. It's such a good reminder for us today when we're battling anxiety and the stress and the what ifs and how is this gonna work out for me? Or what are the consequences gonna be of my actions? Or how am I gonna get through this if I get fired from my job? Whatever it looks like, because the truth is you're putting yourself at the mercy of God, you're trusting him, and all of a sudden you're gonna see whether or not God is going to show up and move. I believe he will. It's the prompting of the Spirit, that bridge that links us to the Creator. Trust those instincts, because we might miss what God wants to do if we don't. I love this one quote. It's Dr. Charles Stanley. It's one of my favorite quotes ever. He says it like this: obey God and leave the consequences to him. I feel like this encapsulates this idea perfectly. Obey God and leave the consequences to him. All we can do is be resolved to obey God, and then we leave the consequences to him. We leave the outcome to him, and we trust his will for our lives. We trust the future that he has planned for us. Daniel didn't know how it'd work out, but he trusted God anyways. And then we continue in the story to see what happens. Verse 10, but the official told Daniel, I am afraid of my Lord the King. Yeah, I would be too, no duh. Who has assigned your food and drink? Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you. Which for us, have my head, that's a figure of speech, but that was literal back then. Ashpenaz literally might lose his head. And so this is pretty scary. That's what I'm talking about. It would be intimidating to make any sort of moves like this. But Daniel doesn't back down. This is what's so incredible. He comes up with a solution. He's probably already thought about it ahead of time. Like, if he comes back with this, I'm gonna say this. And so he shows up and he proposes a test. He says, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. In other words, if it doesn't work out, if the king comes back and he's pretty angry, if we don't actually grow in strength and he blames you and it's our fault, he's saying, hey, it's on us. Like, we'll take responsibility. We'll accept the consequences. You have every right to deal with us accordingly. Deal with us according to how you see. No excuses, no blame. We're gonna, like, just give us a chance and then we'll accept whatever happens. They were willing to live with the consequences of their conviction. And then verse 14 says, crazy enough, so he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. It's kind of crazy. They're healthier and stronger than all the others. It's almost like they knew about clean eating and clean diets that we kind of know about today. It just worked out for them. It's almost like God knows what he's doing when he tells us to do stuff. And so it worked out, and they're healthier than anybody else. Fast forward 3 years later. We're now 3 years down the road. Verse 19, the king interviews these guys. So they've gone through the university system. They've gotten the internship, and now King Nebuchadnezzar is going to interview them. And he says, the king found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, none equal. And so they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all of the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. 10 times better. Daniel's small decision, his choice to trust in a crazy moment, in a seemingly insignificant moment, in the smallest thing, it would be so easy to just eat the food and ask for forgiveness later. Like, it'd be fine. But he chooses to trust, and it gives God the ability to step in. And Daniel gets more and more favor. He's given more and more compassion, not just for 10 days, not just for a few years. But what we see next is that it lasted for decades. Look at verse 21. It says, and Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. And so I don't know if you remember this, but we started with King Nebuchadnezzar. It was the Babylonians. Well, then a little history, the Persians come in, they take over the Babylonians. They're the next great empire, and King Darius is on the throne. And so Daniel works with King Darius. He's in the same kind of position. Then after that, King Cyrus comes. So it is now, we're 70 years. 70 years that Daniel has had influence, 70 years that he has now gotten to work with these different kings and whisper in their ears and influence the culture and everything that's going on in that time period. And you know what set him up for this. You know what set him up for this kind of legacy, for these stories, for what we're reading about today. It's really simple. But Daniel resolved. But Daniel pre-decided. Daniel set his heart. Daniel made up his mind ahead of time. And you know what happened? God stepped in. And this is what legends do. This is what legends are made of. Some of his greatest tests were still ahead. But what I love about this is that a decision that Daniel made when he was around 17 years old lasted all the way through to the point where he is now 70 years old. He didn't wait for the pressure to define him. He decided in advance who he would be, and God honored it, because God honors resolve. He honors when we make up our mind ahead of time. He honors the quiet yes, the unseen no, the obedient step that maybe no one ever notices. It may not feel like it in the moment. It may not feel worth it when you're sitting in your car by yourself, when you've made a tough decision, but I promise you that It is. It is worth it because we never know what God is building through our small, quiet acts of resolve. We never know what God might want to do unless we trust him, unless we take that step of faith and let him move in. See, Daniel's greatness didn't come from one legendary decision. Daniel's greatness came from a lifetime of small, consistent choices in the same direction. This is what made him the legend that we admire. This is why we're reading about him today. It's not just the one big decision, it's that we get to see these choices that he made over a lifetime. And I believe the same is true for you, that your greatness, our greatness, probably won't come from one legendary decision, one massive moment. No, I think your greatness, I think my greatness is gonna come from a lifetime of small, consistent choices in the same direction. Resolve in the small moments shapes who we become in the big ones. Resolve in the small moments actually matters. For Daniel, that looked like refusing a meal, quiet, humbly, faithfully. For you, it might be simply being honest with your spouse. It might be telling the truth to a coworker. It might be declining an opportunity that maybe seems right, but in your gut, you just know it's not. It's in those small choices, in those little moments that set the foundation of your future influence. Because what made Daniel a hero, what made him a legend, wasn't just one decision. It was hundreds of small decisions like it over and over again. Faithfulness layered on faithfulness until he had built a legacy. That's the power of resolve. Choosing to say over and over again, God, I trust that your way, even though it's harder, even though it's slower, even though it might be invisible, that it's better than mine. Praying that when we're making big choices, when we're going through these difficult moments, God, I don't know how this is gonna work out, but I trust your way. Even though it's harder, slower, invisible, I trust that your way is better than mine. Man, if that became our prayer every day, I would love to be around people who are praying that every day. I would love to be in a church of people who are praying that every day. It would be incredible. And so the question that we come back to as we're coming to a close is, so do we possess the stuff of legends? Do we have what it takes? I think the answer is yes, but I think the question that we have to ask ourselves is, what have we resolved to do? What have we resolved to do? Have you resolved to do something? Have you thought about this? And I think there are some people in this room, and I ask that question and you immediately are like, yeah, I feel like I have done this. I feel like I've trusted my conscience. I feel like I listened to that still small voice and I have gotten to where I wanted to be. I've made the hard choices. I pre-decided, I thought about who I wanted to be one day, and now I'm standing in that spot, in that moment, and I am really grateful. And I would just want to encourage you in that. If that's you, that's incredible. Keep going, keep doing it, it's awesome. And Daniel just reminds us of that. But then there's also some of you who, maybe you hear this story and man, you're like, ah, I've been drifting, I didn't really ever do this. I've kind of ended up just where my life led. I didn't pre-decide, I didn't pre-choose. And so now I'm in this place. And I would just say Daniel's story and why we're talking about this today, it's not to make you feel bad, it's actually an invitation. It's an invitation to start to do this, to resolve, to think about what do you value? Who do I wanna be one day? What are the things that I wanna do? Who are the people that I wanna be around? Who do I want to become? And then begin to do that, resolve to do it. This could completely change your life. And then I think on top of all of that, buried underneath this story as well is something that you may not notice immediately, but it's that there's things in here that Daniel's life, it changes or it inspires us. What's so interesting about this story is that Daniel inspired us today. That buried underneath it, he had no idea that the decisions he was making, the resolve that he had way back then was going to influence and inspire us today, that these words would be written. And now I think about that in our modern day, in our context today, and I think about my dad who made those little choices, made that little resolve and then told me about it. And now I'm thinking about it and it's affecting my life today and I'm talking about it to you guys. And all of a sudden he's built a legacy that lasts past himself. And then I think about Cash and I think about Haven and my kids and how the decisions that I'm gonna make today, the choices that I make, what I resolve to do, that could actually impact people way down the line, not just myself. these choices that we make, the resolve, it matters. And you have no idea who it could impact. You have no idea the lives that you could change or what it could do for you and the people around you. The standards you resolve to live by determine the life you live. The standards you resolve to live by determine the life you live. I would love to pray for you. Heavenly Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for this time. Thank you for this truth that we get from your word. Thank you that you've shown us this truth that, Lord, all we have to do is resolve, and it can affect so much of our life down the road. Lord, that we can resolve to make these choices, these decisions, and it ultimately will lead to where we want to go. Lord, thank you for giving us an opportunity to do that. And I just pray that as we leave here today, I pray for all these people in this room, God, that they would just pay attention to the Spirit, pay attention to that still small voice, to their conscience, to the thing going inside of them. And God, I just pray that you would give them the courage to trust it, because that's not always easy. And whatever may be stirring in them this morning, whatever they're wrestling with right now, God, I just pray that you would give them the courage to step into that and trust that you're gonna meet them on the other side, whatever, in whatever way that looks like. God, we love you. We're grateful for you. And we just can't wait to see how you move in our lives. And it's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.